You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Mary Wenzel White. We dive into her journey from writer and author to publisher. So we chat about the choices and experiences that led her to start her own boutique publishing house, which is called Type 18 Books. Like many stories that I share here, there's more to this story than it seems at the start. And along the way, we also chat about the sunny vibes of Southern California, her love for dance, and a trip down memory lane with her very favorite teachers. Are you ready? I'm ready. Let's do this. Mary Wenzel White, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so fun to get together and chat.
Yes. All right. Are you ready for a fun chat? I'm ready for a fun chat.
I think so. Yes. Always ready for fun.
Let's do it. I begin every single interview by asking people where they call home. Where on the Blue Marble do you live these days?
I live in Laguna Hills, California, which is lovely and close to, I think, the best beach, which is Laguna Beach. I don't get there nearly as much as I would like, but it's nice that it's close. Yeah. We pay the big rents here so we can have this lovely weather.
Yes. That's beautiful. I also love that beach. The Southern California beach is one of my favorites. I live on the East Coast in Miami, Florida, but I've learned about myself that I do better when I am close to the water. I'm not walkable to a beach, but I am walkable to like a marina and a bay. And so that
And you
works.
Can get in your water whenever you want. That's what I love about Miami. Like here, it's a little cold sometimes, but
that's what people say. That's what people say. They do. Our water actually gets so hot that in the summer, I would say it's not as swimmable as people think. It's warmer than the air sometimes. Well, not the air, but it's warmer. It gets hot. It's ridiculous.
I'll try to feel bad for you.
Right. Try to feel bad. I wasn't actually asking for something, but yeah, no, absolutely. All right. So no, we're going to start the official interview in a second. But before we do, I want to ask you one more question about you, which is share with me and the audience, if you will, something about you, a hobby, a passion, something that you're enjoying right now that's not family or work.
Spring is the time of dance shows. I love dance. I've been a fan of dance for many, many, many years. I danced a little bit when I was younger, but I'm bad. So when I lived in Chicago, I got really into going to dance shows. So spring is when all the ballets come out and things like that. So I'm looking forward to some performances over the next month or so. Love dance, and spring is the big time. There's dance shows all year, but spring is when there's a lot. So
very good. A specific ballet or all types of dance?
I mean, I like ballet, but I like contemporary dance a lot too.
Okay.
So whatever's out there, pick and choose, can't go to all of it all the time, but.
No, that's exciting. That's wonderful. All right. I love that about you. All right. So topic of the day is we're going to talk about the choices that shifted you from being a writer and an author to a publisher. Does that sound like something we could talk about today?
For sure.
Let's talk
about most of the time is my publishing.
That's good.
Obsessed. So yes.
Well, I think that there are a lot of things that are not absolutes, but I think that when people are building a business and running a business, one of the things that can often be true is that it requires a level of obsession to actually move the needle. So I think that's a positive quality. Probably there are people in your life who are a little bit tired of listening to it, but you know what? We love that for them. Okay.
Yeah, right. I think you're right.
Let's start way back in the beginning. How long have you thought of yourself as a writer?
Oh boy. I can always trace back to childhood and certain habits that I had, of course, but I always thought I'd be a teacher. I mean, my two younger sisters can attest that we would play school. And of course I was a teacher. I would make them do whatever I said, but that wasn't anything we played. I very much liked books when I was a kid, of course. I guess it wasn't until maybe school I had actually, I went to community college for a while and then I quit and then I went back to school and I thought I'd be a paralegal. I thought, oh, I'll study, I'll be a paralegal. And then I had this wonderful English teacher, so many English teacher heroes, right, in stories. And she read something I wrote and said, you should be an English major. And it just went off in my head. And the reason why I wanted to be a paralegal is because I had read so many Grisham novels and I really liked the courtroom drama part, which is nothing like being a paralegal. So I think at that point is when I started thinking about writing because I was studying writing, right? And started writing short stories. And then when I went to graduate school in Chicago is when I started really writing novels too. So I suppose mid-20s-ish is when I
Mid
thought it might be
20s.
something I would do.
So that is really interesting. And so, as a younger kid, when you were in school, you saw yourself probably being a teacher when you were older. Were those games that you played with your siblings, was it specific to any kind of teaching, or was it just whatever you guys were playing and you were in charge?
I think just bossing them was part of it. I still do like the fall semester, like when fall comes. I like the beginning of school. I like schools. I still teach part time. I teach part time at a college. I like it. I like the school setting. I wish I could still be in school. I suppose I could, but I'm kind of busy. But I like school. I like learning. And part of the reason I even went for my master's degree is because at the time my ex now was in law school at night. We both worked all day, and I thought I miss being in school. Like I want to go read some more books and hear some more teachers talk about books and stories, So. Yeah, I mean, looking back, like I said, now that I look back, it makes sense that I would have been a writer. I wrote things when I was younger. My sister just dug up from her garage. She has a lot of my mom's stuff there, and she dug up some poems I wrote at 10. They were so bad. But I didn't really consciously make that a thing until I think I was in my 20s. I thought, yeah, this is something I'm going to do.
Okay, very good. And reading, you were a reader before that. So reading, it sounds like, was always a
Always.
something that you loved. What's a childhood book series or something that you remember to throw you on the
So,
spot?
yeah, my favorite author growing up was an author named Ruth Chu. I don't know if she's still around. We had to go to the library back in those days, which I loved, and they had the big Rolodex where they would get your card. Nothing more exciting than that. And she wrote about witches,
Okay.
and she had a whole series. And also, at the time I was growing up, there wasn't young adult fiction, right? You aged out of the children's section and then you went to your mom's shelf, and picked up whatever bestseller she was reading or whatever she was reading. But so I read every Ruth Chu book, which is kind of interesting because I didn't really continue having a big interest in like fantasy or magic type stuff, but that was my favorite author growing up. And then, of course, like a lot of writers, Little Women. Like blew the world open. I think
Oh
I
yes,
met,
so I read Little Women when I was young. I'm named after the Amy in Little Women.
Are you?
My mom read
So
it when
funny.
she was pregnant, and there was a whole other name picked out for me, and then she picked Amy because she was reading Little Women, which is why she handed it to me at a young age. And the best part about this story, though, in my opinion, is that when she named me Amy, for some reason, after this like major bestseller book, for some reason she thought it was going to be an unusual and different name. And I, the, you, there can be a group of five women in a room, and there might be more than one Amy. So I love that part of the story that it was exactly the opposite of you thinking different, but it was it's fine. It's just a funny part of that story. All right, so. You hit a lot of the things that you've done over the years, but I want to go back through them. You're an accomplished person. And I have learned in my interviewing experience that it's sometimes helpful for me to, and fun for me to let people touch on the things that they've done, even though I want to dig into the deeper questions right away with no backstory. You mentioned you're a teacher, and you've also published at least a couple, more than one book about a book of your own. So tell us a little bit about the things that you've done after you bailed on your paralegal dream.
Yeah, it's so sad. I'll never get in the courtroom. Yeah, so while I lived in Chicago, I was when I had written three novels at that point, and I pulled out the one I thought was had most commercial, viability. So I've now published that, gosh, 10, 15, 12 years ago, I don't know. I was a stay-at-home mom for many years. First of all, after we lived in Chicago, we had four kids pretty quickly, and so I spent wonderful years being a stay-at-home mom. So it
Right.
was after, they kind of got into school a little more independent, I started publishing. So I've published three. My first book actually came out with HarperCollins through an interesting way. They at the time they had this online thing for writers where you could go on there and kind of like a social networking thing, but the carrot was like if you're the highest rated book, you'll get a review from an editor. So it's a long story, but I was the first book that ended up being published under this small imprint of HarperCollins that was in London. So that first book really opened a lot of doors.
I
For
bet. I
me.
mean, that's actually a very big deal. That's actually a very big deal.
It was very exciting. Yeah, it was very exciting. In some ways it was kind of like being published by a small publisher anyway, because it was this little imprint. But fast forward, I published my next two books with a small press. Liked the experience very much. In those years of those books, I went through a divorce. And I had been a stay-at-home mom, so I hadn't worked in 20 years, right? So had to kind of rebuild and figure out what I was going to do, right? And this is where I really get kind of woo-woo about the universe, because so many things in my life have had like a part that I'm like, okay, universe, I see you, I get it. I was working on a book at the time that was, I was trying to be too smart. I had so many things going on. It was going to be just this great novel, right? Great American novel with 10,000 topics. And it was stalling out, of course, because it was like juggling, whatever. And someone approached me and said, do you want to maybe try teaching at this local little college? And I said, sure, what is it? And it was a writing for kids and teens. And I thought, And at the same time, a critique partner said, I think your book is a young adult book. Now, I write literary fiction. So I was like, I don't think so, ma'am. At
I
the
don't think
time.
so.
Yeah. You might be mistaken. So anyway,
Do
I
you
start.
know who I am?
So this is like 6 years ago now. So I start teaching. I start loving young adult fiction, learning everything about it, right? I start teaching a children's lit class, which is kind of the English version of that. I make that novel a young adult novel. And in the, and it just everything clicked into place. I dropped about five of the themes and just went into this young person's voice. At the same time, I'm very involved with the local California Writers Club, and I book a lot of the speakers and this and that. Well, now COVID, right? COVID happens, and now I've got my young adult book finished, and I'm like, let me send it out. Well, nobody's taking books after COVID because all their writers they already have been writing books during COVID, right? So now this is the most commercial thing I'll probably ever write, this young adult book. So I'm like, hearing all these speakers come to the Writers Club about how they publish their own stuff. And, we have so many great speakers on business topics and how to do this and that. And not something I ever wanted to do because I thought that's why I went with the small press. I'm like, oh, I'm too busy. I don't want to. But then I thought, not get any younger. And I liked my experiences publishing, but I think maybe I could do a better job. So let me just publish this book myself, this young adult.
So
And
let
I
me
thought,
pause you right there, and we're going to slow the story down a teeny tiny bit because I know you've told it a lot of times, but you touched on a bunch of things there I think that are going to really interest people. Partly because I think it's 8 out of 10 adults, if you ask them, say they want to write a book, right? Like, so most people actually won't go on and do it,
They
but
do.
they do, they do that. So that's a thing that I think people are. You've already at this point you made the choice to go after the first book when your kids were in school and you got it into a contest and you took a chance. And I think that's significant, right? I mean, even before that, before you had kids or in school or when they were young, you wrote these manuscripts, these three manuscripts. That's also huge to sit down and do it because you always had the choice to like just keep the ideas in your head. How many, roughly, not to hold you to it, but like how many words or pages are in each of those manuscripts or one of them?
Oh my gosh. I mean, a typical book is somewhere between 70,000 words and 100,000 words, maybe.
70,000 or 100,000 words, and you had three of these, like sort of in a
Yeah.
drawer, a metaphorical drawer before you did that. So those, I mean, I just think it's worth like calling it out. The achievement of creating the manuscript or writing it is a bigger deal to acknowledge than people might think, because you don't have to do it, right? You
It's a
could just
lot of
say.
Yeah, it's a lot of hours by yourself. And I another thing I do is I have an editing company, so I edit and consult people on their books, and that's always usually the first thing I tell them. Like when they come to me with a book, I'm like, "Congrats! Like this is
Yeah.
awesome. Who
You have put
cares?
all.
Who cares what a mess it is? Or it's the first draft, and but you finished it. And sometimes people are halfway through and they're like, "What should I do?" I'm like, "Just finish it. Then we'll
Just
talk
finish
about
it.
the other part, which is the editing. But for now, just get it out there, you know."
Yeah, get it done and get the ideas out.
Yeah.
So we're recording this in 2025, which everybody listening to it when it first comes out will know. But part of this story is tied to lockdown. And I'm a person who I think it feels like it was a distant lifetime ago. And also just like yesterday, there are days when I hate talking about how the pandemic is continuing to live on in like
Right.
the way we see things. But also it just is like it's a huge part of many people's experiences. And so you're at this point, you've got some experience, you're teaching, you've published some novels, you do some editing, you know how to do this, you've made peace with yourself that you've got a young adult novel, which I think is really interesting, and we can talk more about that in a second. But you choose to at first self-publish this novel, I think.
Well, kind of. The
Okay, so walk me
whole
through that.
snowball went pretty quickly. It went
Okay.
from maybe I'll do this to myself. I should have an imprint. I should publish other books too. Like it just kind of happened pretty quickly. I thought it would be so fun to have a boutique publishing house where because I know so many writers, you would not believe how many fantastic writers are out there that can't find a home for their fantastic book. It's kind of mind-boggling. So I thought, how great would it be to have this publishing house where I, kind of curate a selection of literary books, and then I had to, of course, change my or alter my perception of what that even meant to me, or at least further define it. And it'll be young adult books and adult books. I also like things that kind of experiment with form, and that's really hard. Those things are really hard to place a lot of times. Things that, mess around with time frames and all kinds of stuff, experimental type things. So I thought, how fun would that be, right? And then the next thing I knew, I was getting up at night because what wakes me up is making the experience so great for the authors, right? And after I had signed my first two authors, I remember just having like sweaty nights where I was like, oh my God, what have I done? Like, one thing to be responsible for yourself, but now you're worried about other people and their experience and their book. And it's like, so that's still the part that scares me and also really motivates me too. And that was one of my goals for the publishing house was to make this experience very transparent, very, just as awesome as I can make it for the authors to get their stories out there,
Okay, so yeah, that, and I read that that's part of the mission statement behind your company. And I think that's really good. So you said, wouldn't that be fun? And the question I have is, when you think back to the very, very beginning of this, when you had your own manuscript that you were working on, and you said it happened, the snowball happened very quickly. Is there a point where you can sort of think of what the very first time you thought about it that was like, I could do other people's books as well. Like I could not just publish my own, but like, can you remember how you made the jump?
I think maybe part of it was like maybe there was some aspect of thinking about legitimacy and like I want this to look like a serious endeavor. It just came so quickly, one upon the other, because I think because I had been doing so much editing and my editing business had been around longer, like now I'm in my ninth year, I think, and it had really turned into a lot of book consulting, a lot of publishing consulting. I helped consult, I'm doing a lot of nonfiction, helping people basically publish their books. So I think it just, I don't, it honestly, I don't, I'm not trying to evade the question, but I can't even remember a time when the two things weren't connected. It's kind of
No,
like,
that's fine.
it's
Yeah.
like I'm adopted and people say, well, when do you remember not being adopted? I go, no, I just, it's always has been a thing. So it's like, I feel like those two things have always, it just was so I should do mine. I'll do other ones too. Like it just came so quickly. So
Yeah. No, and
I
I don't feel like
don't
you're
know.
trying to evade the question. I think that for me, making the choice, like making the choice that turns into the domino that then pushes all the other things along. Like you were
Yeah.
saying earlier, like, you're speaking to the universe and it's still like it wasn't moving. And then when you line it up, then it moves. And so backing it up is, I think, helpful because
Yeah.
once you
Yeah.
make the choice, then the action sometimes feels like it takes care of itself. It doesn't. You still do have to do all of the work.
And I think sometimes choices don't, when I think back to that, it doesn't even really even feel like a choice now. It just feels like, oh yeah, that was what was going to happen. Like, kind of like how I became a writer instead of a paralegal. It's like in hindsight now, and maybe I'm doing the hindsight thing too quickly this time around, but it just seems like, oh yeah, that was going to happen. Like, I'm not even sure I chose it. Like, it just,
Right.
of course I did because I had to sit and do all the work and do all the everything, but,
I think that one of the things that is an outsider that I'm seeing is that you had a pretty well, you can tell me. You had some knowledge about the publishing process and the publishing industry, which frankly I think does fluster, confuse, frustrate a lot of people who aspire to be authors, right? It's a very much, even today when self-publishing in so many ways is really, really upfront and obvious. But yeah, so you had that piece, which maybe it was that, like, it was like, well, if I'm gonna do it, I know enough to do it for not just me, for others.
Yeah, and I think for me, my journey with, going from being a stay-at-home mom, which I loved, to deciding like on a career, it's not that easy with an English degree, right? I
Right.
mean, we all know that these liberal arts, sometimes these jobs, they don't pay a lot, right? And I'm also not young, so I want to spend my time doing what I want to be doing, right? So I think what you said about, why 5 years ago did I not self-publish those other two novels? For one, I didn't have the knowledge. And the thing for writers, it's sometimes seems like a really frustrating time, but it's actually kind of a golden era in a way of authors have so many choices about how they can publish. That was not the case 15 years ago when I started out, It just wasn't. I mean, I suppose it was in some ways, but we really do have a lot of choices. And I know it seems overwhelming, but if you don't think that you have the wherewithal or the time or the money to self-publish, then don't. Like, you have a lot of options. If you really, and I ask people that when they come to me for editing, like, well, how do you want to see your life? How do you see this book coming out? How do you see yourself spending your time? Do you want to be on social media? If you don't, then don't.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just kind of weighing your expectations. And it's funny because that's sort of like a little model of my whole life, where I'm at in my phase now, which is like trying to make decisions about, well, how do you want to be spending your time? How do you want to be spending your life? Like, I don't have as much time for writing anymore. How do I feel about that? Do I want to alter something around so that I have more time for that? Right? It's just this, it's funny thinking about talking to you today. I thought, gosh, there's nobody more perfect to talk about imperfect adulting than me. Does
I
everyone feel
get
that
that.
way
I
when they
get that a
come
lot. I
on?
get that a lot. I really do. And I love it because it is, one of the through lines of why I tell these stories, why I name this company that, why I do these things, is that I think it's supportive to hear other people say that they accept the fact that it's not perfection. Because I do think that, and you're somebody who loves school and you're a teacher, I think that we sell young kids this goal of perfection. And we grade, young kids, we grade their papers and we give them a gold star when they get, 90 and 100. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you back up, and I didn't know this about you before we had the conversation, when you find yourself in that spot where you're like, you know what? Actually, these little people that I'm in charge of raising are in the way of me and my career. Like, there's a choice here that I didn't know I was going to have to make. I call it the parenting pause. Not everybody makes it, but it does impact everybody at that point. That tends to throw people off that loop. And then fast forward a few years, and many people are like, well, I missed my shot because I didn't do it the right way. And so now I don't have as many choices.
And
And
I
your
don't even know,
example.
for me, it was a parenting pause. That's at that point in my life, and for a lot of my younger life, that's really the biggest thing I wanted to do
You
was
wanted to do
be a mom,
them, be a
right?
mom, and you made the
So
choice. Yeah.
yeah, and I still wrote a little when they were younger. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I feel like there's always choices along the way, and it's constantly, and I definitely don't want to come across like, oh, and then I just made a publishing company and now I'm so successful. Like I'm a mess. Like I work way too much. I mean, I'm still trying to find a balance.
Yeah.
My friends can attest, like I'm not very available. I work a lot. I don't sleep well, but I love it. But it's constantly making assessments. And that's why I say, even with the self-publishing thing, like it's okay if you don't want to do that, you
Yeah.
know? There's so many ways that you can publish, and it really for me is about, you know, I think another thing, speaking of kids and ways, I think sometimes, and I have four young adults, they're in their 20s. They've all been told like you have to find something you're very passionate about to go
Yeah.
work and do. And I kind of call BS on that because maybe you, it's great to have a passion,
Yep.
but it might not be your job. It just really depends on what kind of person you are. And my kids, they're all different types of people. And some people probably won't be happy unless they're working in something they're passionate about. But you can have your passion aside. Maybe you're the type that sometimes I think it would be great to go work down at like Target or something. I'm
Oh,
serious. Like,
yeah.
eight
No.
to five, and I can just think about my book while I'm ringing people up, and then I can come home and my brain's fresh and I can write my books or whatever.
Yep.
So everyone's different. I mean, I having passions are great, but I think kids are all like, oh, they get so frustrated because they're like, I just don't know what I'm passionate about.
Right. And they
So.
think that it's a whole career that you need to be passionate about. And when you have this conversation with young 20-year-olds, my youngest is 18. It's an interesting thing because they don't actually have a lot of job knowledge at that point.
No.
So they've only got like 10 or 15 choices
Right.
bouncing around in their head. And they're like, well, if I'm not passionate about being, a fireman, then obviously that boat has
Right.
sailed. And so, and the tapestry of adulthood is so much bigger, right? So, and I meet a lot of people. So, and but they're on the flip side, right? There are people who are like surgeons and, I always throw doctors under the bus here because those are the kids who tend to know when they're like 7 years old and follow
Yeah.
that path all the way up.
Yeah.
They, that's one thing, but, the rest of us, maybe there's a piece of it that we like, and then that can fit into a bunch of different things. So, like for you, you're a writer. You were going to be a paralegal. You were attracted to the work of John Grisham. He's actually not known for being like the great literary writer of the
No, I
20th
just went.
century, but he's a great storyteller.
I was such a reader that I had
Yeah.
all kinds of phases. I don't know
Yeah.
if you remember those old books. They were like historical fiction books. One was about Michelangelo. I can't even think of the author. Like I read
I don't
whatever was
remember.
on my mom's shelf. Like, you know, whatever was on her shelf in the 70s and 80s, like I just would read it. So I had a phase with him and everybody else, right?
Yeah, the ones that were on my dad's shelf that I read, he was a, I think the author, there was a mystery writer who wrote about horse, horse,
Oh, yeah.
Dick Francis, I think his name. So those were
Right,
like
yeah.
the summer books that I would read just because they were right there, like you're talking about. And then
Right.
also the one, the guy, I'm gonna space it, the guy who wrote like Hawaii and those big
Missioner.
novels, Mishner. Yeah, that's how I
Yep.
read. That's how I read
Everybody
Mishner.
had those, right?
Oh, they, and
I
they,
probably read them too.
right.
I
And
don't
then I read
remember.
exactly as many until I got to the point where I was like, these are actually the exact same novel in different locations.
Yeah.
I think I can move on
Yeah.
to another passion project.
Exactly.
So, but all right. So that is very good. Okay. So I mentioned this. When I read the bio for your company, I see it as being something that is mission driven. Like, I don't know if you would agree that there's a mission behind that. You describe it as to provide transparent partnership with authors and bring to life great stories by unforgettable voices, books that will have an impact and change lives. So the question that I have is like not geared on asking you why you chose that or defending it or anything, but for anybody who's listening who wants to someday work with a publisher or who's trying to figure out how they feel about it. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean with that transparent partnership? Because for me, as somebody who's not actually done that work with a publisher, I don't really know what would have what the other option is, an obscure partnership. I don't, but what are the issues
Yeah,
that you were
right. A secretive partnership
right? So
behind closed doors.
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I really liked both of my publishing experiences and the small publisher that took my other two books. And her and I are friends. And obviously, with a smaller publisher, you have more say in the cover and this and that. But one thing I would say in common with all three books, even the big one, is number one, I wish they would have had more editing. And publishers are very, enthusiastic, and they love your book, and they're like, oh, it's going to be great. And sometimes it feels like there's kind of an overpromise, underdeliver, and maybe it's just their enthusiasm. But I felt, I guess, disappointed in what was done for the book, and now from the publisher side, I have a lot more insight into what we're able to do, right? So part of that transparency was like, we're going to work as a partner, the authors and I, and I'm going to be very upfront with you what we can do budget-wise and what we can't. Our big book this year that's coming out in September, I mean, him and I are back and forth. I just sent him a list. Here's all the contests and review things that we're going to pay for, and here's ones I'd like to do if we can budget-wise, and here's ones I'm asking, do you want to do? Like, it's just very clear. And each author's different, what we're going to do for it and this and that. So the transparency, I fight really hard to get opportunities for my authors to have that fun book experience. I had a connection at the Portland Book Festival, thank God. And so I got a local author to go sit at their table for the event. I try to help them set up events and have that fun, book, author experience. I put my royalties to the authors a little higher than a lot of small presses do. Just all these things that I want to be very transparent with them about, again, what we can do, what we can't do, what the experience is going to look like. On just be honest, and it's a
Yeah.
partnership. I will send authors emails all the time. Hey, I saw this. Are you interested in this? And hopefully they'll do the same to me. Hey, I saw this. Can we do this? So it's really a partnership. I try to be very available to authors. Again, this is our interest in the company, but it's also their interest, and it is a business, but I like to see it also as a personal relationship, that we're going to do this fun thing together. Cause books and reading are great, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a quality of life thing as well. And I feel like there was another side of the question that maybe I didn't get to.
No, I think that that's, I think you answered it. I think that what I heard you say is that, your experience working with the publishers was not bad by any stretch of the imagination. You're close, but that by opening the book and being very transparent, you hope to be more collaborators and partners in co-creating this project. And that part of this is really giving them realistic expectations of what is possible to do so that you don't have false. I mean, I
Yeah.
think that's very helpful in all projects because anytime you're involved in anything, whether it's making dinner or writing a book, if your expectations about what's possible out, are not related to what you can actually do, that's frustrating.
Yeah, and there's so much about publishing, and I suppose a lot of businesses, and especially creative businesses, that are, disappointing. It's a tough business, it just is. And so why
Well,
not take advantage of the things we can control? Let's
and the
set
other thing is
those.
that, yeah, you hit on this. There's a lot of knowledge behind the scenes in businesses, which would be called expertise. Like, and it's hard to know what that is with when you're not behind the scenes. So, like, but there's 10 or 11 words that you've mentioned in this interview that I was like, wow, I'd never thought about that. Like all the contests, all the awards. You use the word imprint when you were talking about the publisher, and I was like, oh, I kind of know what that is, but not really. You've got a lot of expertise, but with anything, it's really easy to look at a finished book in a bookstore and be like, oh, easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
How to
The
get there, though?
how to get there is not apparent, not as easy. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. We've been talking about your company for a while because the choice you made was to do that. But I do want to give you a chance to just directly talk to the audience about what you do these days, how you like people to connect and follow you online.
Oh yeah, well we're at type18books.com. Happy to hear from writers who have something to pitch. What am I looking for these days? Novellas. We started a novella collection this year. I have one right now to look at, but we published three to start it off. A novella is obviously a shorter novel. Has kind of different aims and whatever. I love things that are experimental, so I'm happy to be, a home for that. Definitely looking for young adult. Weirdly, I thought I would have so much young adult, but it's not that as easy as I thought to find young adult. Love to have young adult stories, especially diverse stories, things that experiment with form, even in young adult. Oh, I'd love to get a novel in verse. So yeah, love to hear from writers. We We'd love to hear from influencers and other people that like to review books because we're always building our community there too. We do have a, newsletter you can sign up for, and we're out there. We're out
Awesome.
there and ready to communicate. We're on social media. Find us on TikTok and Instagram and Blue Sky and Twitter and Facebook and everything else. So, well, maybe not everything else, mostly those.
Because right, it used to just be one or two things, and now there's a
Right?
lot. And the
And
everything
I
else can be a
fight.
long list.
When
They're
a new
like,
one comes, I'm like, no. And
right,
then,
exactly.
oh,
Well, just wait. There'll
yeah.
be an app that'll do it all. That'll just parse it out to
That would
all
be
the.
nice.
So Type 18 Books is the company. I'm going to put that link to that in the show notes wherever you're listening to it. You were generous enough to give us a coupon. Everybody who's listening can get a 10% discount off of all the books that are there at type18books.com. I want to thank you for that generous offer. It's very nice. People listen to podcasts and watch podcasts when they're running and walking and driving and doing all of those things. The easiest way to get these links is to be signed up for the Imperfect Adulting email community, and then I email them directly to your inbox. You get information about new episodes. You get all the links that we talk about in the show. You'll get the social media, all of the things. And then you just click on them and it's easy peasy. No need to scramble for a pen or try and remember. Now,
I was going to say, and we
Barry.
have audiobooks too for those people out running. I have
Oh,
some
yeah, audiobooks. I'm a big
audiobooks
fan.
too.
I'm a big fan of audiobooks. Although I will say, it totally depends on the voice of the author, because there have been times and wonderful performers, right? So no shade to the people who are doing it. But if I have a mental like concept, especially in a series, right? Especially in a series like the John Grisham or whatever, if I have a mental idea of what the voice is supposed to be and the actor's voice doesn't match, I'm like, ah, this is just going to be half
This
the
is
book I
wrong.
read, right?
This is
Just going to
wrong.
have to read it and use my imagination. All right. Mary Wenzel White, are you ready for the final questions?
I think so.
All right,
Yeah,
let's do
let's
it.
see.
What is the first book that you remember reading as a child?
Oh, gosh. Okay, I wish I had it here to show you. It's downstairs, though. For some reason, when I was a little kid, I always think of this book. There was we my mom. Bless her. She was a big reader. That's where I became a reader. We had a big bookshelf in my room, my sister's room. I forget. I had this Disney book, and it was in a set of three. But the one I always pulled out had all the different Disney stories. And it was a book probably from the 60s, right? And it had full color pictures of Snow White and all the different
All the
Disney
princesses.
stories.
All right. I
That's
love
the first
that.
one I would go to that one over and over. I don't know if it's the first one I read, but it's the first one I'd go to over and over and over.
No, that's a great memory. Okay. So I knew that you were a teacher, but I didn't know that you had wanted to be a teacher when you were a kid when I wrote this question. Do you remember the names of any of your elementary school teachers, and do you want to share one of them with us?
In eighth grade, was it eighth grade or ninth grade? I'm blanking now. I want to say maybe high school then. Elementary. Well, in fifth grade, Mrs. Cooper, I love this about her. For a reward at the end of the day, she would read from the mixed up files of Basil E. What's the last name? Frank
Oh.
Weiler. Frank,
Okay,
I have
yeah.
it somewhere. Love that book. For those who don't know, it's about two kids who run away from home and live in the Metropolitan Museum, right?
Yeah,
In New York.
they live in the museum. I wouldn't have
My
remembered which one,
memory.
but yeah.
Anyway, Mrs. Cooper, if you can imagine, for a reward, would read that book to us at the end of the day. And I always think about that even now, how awesome it was that that was our reward, right? Because now sometimes kids think it's a punishment to go read, right?
I know, but at that age, I loved being read to.
At the
That
end
is.
of the day, if we had been good, she would read that book to us. So Mrs. Cooper, for sure, storytelling and reading.
That's so wonderful.
I was going to say ninth grade, Mrs. Acciani, who Romeo and Juliet, we had to read, not had to, we read, and she was a big influence on the English side of things too.
That's a very that those are two wonderful memories. My husband can list off all of his teachers from when he was in childhood, and I don't think I remember more than one. So that was the
I
motivation for
tried. Maybe
that.
I could. Maybe I could if I tried. I don't
I maybe remember one or two. That's just not.
know.
It's like a piece of my brain that I just. I was like, nope, done. Bye.
You just got through
Exactly.
it.
All right, here we go. So, last one. Do you prefer to be a person who gives advice, a person who gets advice, or both?
Oh, that's a good question. I get asked advice a lot throughout my life. It's interesting. One of the things that divorce and kind of like the hard times that I've gone through with mental health and stuff, I sort of shifted. I was always a person that people would come to for advice. And I think in some ways I still am. But I've had a real kind of seismic shift in the last decade of my life. And now I reach out for help a lot to people for advice because I sometimes think the older I get, the less I judge or know about anything. I don't
Yeah.
know how that works, right? When you're like in your 30s, you're so adamant about everything. Well, this is the way this, and now I'm just like, that's what he wants to do. Like,
Yeah.
I have no,
Every once
I'm
in a while
not
I
even sure
say,
what's right or wrong anymore sometimes. I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's a lesson that comes with age. Every once in a while I'll be like, I proceeded forward with all the confidence that you can have. It only happens when you're in your mid-20s. It's like
Right? And
there's like that
we
period.
need that
Yes.
from our young people. God bless you. Do get out there, you know.
Yes.
If there's something I like to give advice about, I do tutor now. I teach college, I tutor high school, middle school, and some younger kids. And I know about writing and books. So I love when kids ask me, like, what should I read? Or, you know, about writing. So I love to give advice about that. About how to live or things to do. No thanks. I don't have any answers. And I love to ask advice from people who are passionate about something. Or I
Yeah.
have a couple great friends who are so good at gathering information about stuff like household things. So if I need advice from them about something, I know they're very thorough and saves me from having to do it right. So I guess both. I mean,
Sounds like both. Sounds like
yeah.
both.
I mean, at the end of the day, probably neither.
Both or neither. I didn't put that on
Just
there
being
like
a
on
little.
purpose because I figured people would be like, ah, neither. Okay, very good.
Right. I don't know. Depending on my mood, I guess both or neither.
That's it, Mary Wenzel White. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.